This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Hey, I'm Sarah. When planning our home birth, my husband Matthew and I were really frustrated by the lack of empowering and honest home birth resources. So we created this podcast to start a new conversation for moms and families like us. This is Doing It at Home. Hey everyone, welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast and welcome to our first episode of 2018. So happy, healthy, blessed new year to all of you and thanks so much for joining us. So we have a really cool episode to kick off the year, and that is a first for the show. It is a birth story that involves home birth after cesarean, and we have not had that yet, so I'm really excited to bring that perspective. But real quick before that, just wanted to share some ways that you can get involved with the Doing It at Home community. Ways to keep the conversation going, all that great stuff. We've made some changes to our website recently. We have a resources page there for you to see some of our favorite things that we've used, books, products, programs, all that sort of stuff from pregnancy, birth, and beyond. So go check that out on our website, diahpodcast.com. And also ways that you can support the show, either through emotional and mental vibes or through monetary donations. So we have it set up there for you to make a one-time payment or recurring, or you can use our nifty Amazon link there to purchase things that you would already be buying anyway, but just through our link. And then as a result of using our link, Amazon thanks us for us referring you. So it's this nice little loop circle of reciprocity. And quick note on that, nothing looks different on the page. When you click that link, it looks like you're in a normal Amazon interface. So nothing about it is different. Don't worry, it's not wrong. It's just a trust that the link, you know, kicks back to us. So that's a way there for you too. We have a Facebook page, a private Facebook page for the community, and you can check that out. There's a link to it from the support page of our website, and that is the Doing It at Home Birth group. And then also we have a free ebook for you, 12 Things That Made Our Home Birth Awesome. So you can go download that and it's sent right to your inbox and you can check out the things that made our home birth awesome. Cool. Okay. So jumping into a little bit about today's story, we dive into the question of how do you turn the trauma from one birth experience into a trusting and healing home birth after cesarean? Well, Diana shares that with us today in this episode and how she did that. She takes us through the journey of both of her pregnancies and births and kind of contrasting and comparing the two, her sons, Arakel and Rama. Now, first off, just have to note that she and her husband, Brad, found out they were pregnant as they were planning their wedding, and they were planning to get married at Burning Man, which is super cool. So despite being pregnant and not feeling so hot, in her first trimester, that didn't change their plans. So baby Arakel has been to Burning Man in utero. Pretty sweet. Anyway, Diana has always considered herself interested in birth, and so when planning her own, she decided to do it at home. But after a day and a half of labor, something felt off, and so they implemented Plan B, transferred to the hospital, and Diana felt the energy shift immediately and her autonomy taken away. So she experienced what is often referred to as the cascade of interventions, Pitocin, an eventual cesarean, and that prompted her to move into this sort of survival mode. And she remembers feeling violated in a very extreme and horrifying way. And so once baby Arakel arrived safely and healthily, Diana was kind of left with feelings of PTSD and postpartum depression. So when it came time to plan for second birth, Diana had some healing to do. And so scared to have another similar situation like her first birth, she tapped into this powerful and innate trust in birth and in her body's ability. And so a series of connections with other people and alignment and opportunities to move through all of that, she found a midwife who would work with her and support her in having a magical home birth after cesarean, an HVAC. And that's exactly what Diana got. And she would describe it in one word as ecstasy. So listen in to hear that amazing story and everything else that Diana has to offer. She's such a beautiful soul and spirit, and I'm so grateful to have her on the show and to kick off 2018. So here it is.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, Diana. Welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. How are you?
Hi, Sarah. I'm good. Thanks so much for having me. This is really exciting.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about our conversation because you are going to be a first for us on the show. And I'll just go ahead and get it out there. It's a home birth after cesarean. And that's something we have not talked about yet on the show. And I just know now a lot of ears are perking up and people are getting really excited to hear what you have to share. So just thank you for taking time and being so bold and brilliant and beautiful to share your story with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to do so.
Great.
I'm excited to share it. Yeah.
So kick us off just with a little bit about you and your family.
Sure. Yeah. I live in Seattle, Washington. I'm married to my partner, Brad, and we have two little boys, a four-year-old named Erikel and a two-year-old named Rama. My husband works in software and I'm a writer.
Awesome. That's so cool. So then tell us a little bit about your family planning and growing your family thus far. And, you know, from first birth into second birth, a little bit of that context and backstory.
Sure. Well, I became pregnant kind of unexpectedly. We actually weren't trying to have kids. We were, engaged to be married. And, my first pregnancy was really just a big shock. It was a surprise to both of us. We were just a couple months away from our wedding. So, after we kind of got over the initial shock, we started to get a little bit excited. You know, we loved each other. We were getting married. We knew that we wanted at some point to have kids. So the timing was a little strange, but it turned out just fine, just after we had a chance to get used to it.
Yeah.
An interesting part of the story is that we were actually planning our wedding at Burning Man, which is like this kind of desert festival rave party thing that happens in Nevada, if you've never heard of it.
That and is amazing. But you were planning to get married there?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And it's not an awesome place for like a first trimester pregnant woman to be. You know, it's like really harsh conditions, you know, everybody's partying and doing things that I, you know, wouldn't partake in as a pregnant woman. But we kind of couldn't get out of it because, you know, we were locked into this. I did end up going, I was about 12 weeks pregnant and it was fun. It all turned out fine, but it was a interesting little twist to how our family got started, I guess.
Wow. That's a great thing to have in your story. I think that's just so cool. And you can tell, you know, Erikel that he was at Burning Man.
we do. Actually, we do tell him
that. That's so great.
Yeah. We have pictures that we show him and I don't think he really cares, but
right.
At some point he might think it's cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's how my first pregnancy started. I have always been really, really interested in birth for some reason. I don't know like where I got this bug. I was, you know, born in a very conventional way in a hospital with OBs. My own parents weren't really into like home birth or midwifery or crunchier things, but that's always been something that's really interesting to me. It always made a lot of sense to me to birth in the company of women, to be at home, to not turn birth into a medical event, because I actually don't believe it's a medical event, which is kind of a shocking thing for most people to hear, but I've always felt that way even before I thought about getting pregnant or thought about having babies. It was just an interest of mine. So we planned from the very start to have Erickel at home, and my husband was right on board with it. He thought it was a great idea. So that's the birth that we planned, and I had a really uneventful pregnancy, very healthy, no issues. He was due at the very end of February, and I had a great pregnancy right up until the very, very end, like the last 2 weeks. I started to feel suddenly just like super heavy and uncomfortable, and like all of my internal organs were smashed, and like I just couldn't breathe. And I kind of thought that you know, well, every pregnant woman probably feels this way when she's like almost 10 months pregnant, you know. So I didn't think too much of it. My midwives weren't concerned. And but that was kind of a foreshadowing for what was going to happen with his birth. Mm. So I'll just briefly tell you a story, and stop me at any time if I'm not giving enough detail, if you want me to go into more. But I went into labor with Erickel at about 41 weeks. It's pretty typical for a first-time mom. And I labored at home with my doula, my midwife, and my husband for about almost a day and a half.
Oh, wow.
Almost a whole day and a half. And I'm counting not from like having contractions, but I mean like active labor, mm-hmm. like active labor pattern, very long time. And obviously there were some breaks in between where I'd have a little bit of a lull and then it'd pick up again. But something was just really off with this labor. And I, even though I had never done this before, I could feel like my body was dilating appropriately. But I could feel my son really high up in my body, if that makes sense. Like I could feel him right under my ribs. He never descended. He was fine during the labor. He, you know, his heart rate was fine. He was moving around. He was fine, but there was just something really off. And I toughed it out, I think, for as long as I felt comfortable, which I said was about a day and a half, I think. It's weird, you know, when you try to convey a timeline with labor and you kind of have to consult other people, because when you were in it, it's like a time warp and you don't know how many hours you did one day. Yeah, so it's kind of hard for me to be accurate, but it was around that long that I labored at home. And at a certain point, my midwife, you know, kind of looked at me and was like, Diana, you know, what do you think is going on with your labor or your son? What do you think is happening? I checked into my gut, and the first thing that I felt intuitively was that something was wrong with his position. Something was off, like maybe his head was off to the side. We knew he was head down, but like something was just strange about his position. So we tried some, you know, laboring in some different positions, you know, like squatting and different positions with my legs. And it just, nothing was changing. And it got to a certain point where I just felt like something needed to change to get my son here. And, and so we decided to transfer. We had a plan in place if we needed to. There was a local hospital that my midwife had relationships with, the midwives that worked there, and they had midwives too, which was kind of a plus.
That's great.
For me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we made the decision to transfer and got in the car. That car ride was the most excruciating 10 minutes of my life, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like every laboring woman says, that car ride to the hospital really is the worst.
Yeah.
But we got there. Yeah, we got there. And almost immediately I could tell, like, there was this huge shift, like this energy shift in what I knew was going to happen to me. I could feel as soon as I walked in the door that all of my autonomy was taken away. I mean, I was definitely a number, not a really a person.
Right.
And, you know, I signed some forms that I couldn't possibly read. You know, I basically said they could do anything to me. That's just what you do when you're in that model. And then so quickly things started to happen to me. I was given an epidural. I didn't ask for one, but they gave me one. I was totally numb from the chest down, couldn't move, but I could at least rest a little bit. So I rested a little bit. And, you know, it was really the very typical cascade of interventions that you hear about, where the epidural made my contractions slow down.
Yeah.
They gave me Pitocin.
Yep.
I didn't ask for that. I didn't give consent to it. They just did it. They broke my water. I also didn't consent to that. They just did it. And this was all really scary for me, but I was totally in survival mode. You know, mm-hmm. It was like being through any physically traumatic experience. Like, I can imagine a rape survivor just kind of goes into like, I just have to get through this to survive. And that's, I actually don't make that comparison lightly.
Right.
It actually felt incredibly violating, mm-hmm. In an extremely intimate way. So I was in a survival mode during that time, mm-hmm. and I just received the perfect typical cascade of interventions, you know, epidural, Pitocin, water breaking. Oh my gosh, the baby has scary heart decelerations
right.
happening. We have to get him out right now. Immediate C-section, bam.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. It was horrifying. I mean, being through a surgery like that when you're wide awake, and I just don't even have words to describe it. It was horrible. It was horrifying. They separated me from my husband. They did let him in the OR eventually, but for a good period of time, I was alone and really scared and naked and vulnerable. And these were strange men that I'd never seen in my life. It did happen very quickly, though. The surgery happened really quickly. And they pulled my son out. I heard him cry. And they took him away to the side and weighed him and, you know, did his Apgar scores and all those things. And the doctor that was holding him, I heard him yell out, "He's 12 pounds, 3 ounces.
Ooh.
And I remember turning my head, and I think I literally, Sarah, audibly said no. I said no. I cannot grow a baby that big. I mean, to give you a little bit of context, I am a petite person. My husband's a petite person. I'm a vegan. Like, I cannot grow a 12-pound baby. It's impossible. But I looked, I turned my head and I saw him, and he was huge. He was so big, so big. He was just definitely 12 pounds, 3 ounces. He was huge.
Wow.
Biggest infant I had ever seen. And in fact, one of the OB nurses later told me that she had been working in OB for like 20 years and he was the biggest one she had ever seen. So, so big. And, you know, everybody of course thought gestational diabetes when they saw a baby that big. And I had been screened for it and I knew that I didn't have it,
right.
But they, you know, of course they screened him and his blood sugars were fine. He was perfectly healthy. He was just ginormous.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's, and you know, I want to be careful not to imply that women can't naturally birth 12-pound
right.
pound babies, because they can and mm-hmm. they do.
Yeah.
They definitely do. And I know that most people within the mainstream, when they hear my story, they go, "Well, thank God you had a C-section because you had a 12-pound baby." And I get that that's part of the narrative. I understand. And I do think that his size contributed to how difficult his labor was.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think about it now, I just think, you know, however, his birth was going to be an initiation no matter how it happened.
Mm.
You know, he was going to make a big, big entrance in some way. That's just who he is.
I love that. I do have some questions.
Sure.
We've gotten a couple of emails and things from listeners regarding transfers, because we've had a few on the show. Women have spoken about, you know, planning for a home birth and then plan B gets put into action, and questions around just why, you know, what was the ultimate reason or what is the explanation for the transfer? And, you know, me not having experienced that, but just vicariously through these conversations, a lot of time my response to that is, you know, it can be a multitude of things. Obviously, you know, every woman is so different, but most of the time it seems to be a very long labor, kind of what you described,
mm-hmm.
and either mom is just exhausted, you know, let's get to the hospital, maybe get an epidural, maybe rest, whatever, and then potentially still have a vaginal birth or not. Or, you know, there's the smaller percent where something might go a little askew. And so it's like, okay, we need some of those interventions in place. So all of that to say, would you say ultimately what I heard from you was this kind of divine motherhood intuition that you had and you said about the positioning. Is that what you would say ultimately was the decision to transfer, like just that offness that you were describing?
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And I should also say that like my biggest fear was ending up at the hospital. Yeah. My biggest fear wasn't pain. It wasn't how hard labor was going to be. I was only afraid of ending up at the hospital because I kind of knew what I was going to get there. I didn't want that model of care, and it's fine if someone else does. I just really didn't want that. And so you're correct. The transfer was definitely my call, and it was definitely my own guidance saying just that something had to shift. I didn't know what it was. I knew Arc, he was fine. I could tell Arco was fine. I was okay. Not great, but I was okay. I just knew something had to shift. And you're right. In speaking with midwives and other women in my birthing community locally, that is the vast, vast majority of reasons why women transfer is because they're exhausted. It's a long labor. It's usually not like a dire emergency,
right?
You know, like you would imagine. Like it's not like, oh my God, something's wrong. We have to run to the hospital right now. Thank God. You know, it usually is something more ephemeral.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. And now I would imagine, you know, as we get into your second birth, some of this will come out, but how since that experience have you taken some action to heal, to, you know, rectify some of what you experienced? What's that been like for you?
Well, I'm ashamed to say that work didn't really take place until my second pregnancy when I found myself having to do it. You know what I mean? Like the universe just said, okay, Diana, you have, and we'll get more into this, I'm sure. But, my second baby was also not a planned pregnancy because birth control does not work for us apparently. And so
birth control doesn't work for you when you grow big babies. That's some super vegan food you're eating over correct. There.
Yes. That is, like, I guess, what happened. So anyways, I didn't do that work until my second pregnancy when I didn't have a choice and I had to do it.
Gotcha.
In the 2 years after Erica's birth, the first year was extremely difficult. I had every problem with breastfeeding you can possibly imagine, 100 times over. And, that really consumed me. I think that for a lot of moms that have traumatic births or births that didn't go quite the way that they planned, I've heard that like when the breastfeeding relationship goes well, that is, can be really healing and you know, help to restore a little bit of faith in your body. And so for me, having that work was important to me and it was a struggle. And that really dominated like the first 6 months of his life. And I also definitely absolutely had PTSD. I had nightmares. I cried all the time. It was a rough time and I didn't seek out any emotional or spiritual healing. And I really should have. But I just didn't do it until I had to. You know, I was a brand new mom like any other brand new mom, just trying to figure out how to be a brand new mom.
Yeah.
And dealing with trauma and abuse, I didn't have the bandwidth for it, you know, at that time.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can appreciate that. And I think through sharing like you are, it can inspire other women to, you know, maybe do the work earlier on or put mechanisms in place or people or whatever. And, you know, it's all in our own time. But these stories are so important. I appreciate you and, just for doing it. It's great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I hope that anyone who's listening to this, who's had a traumatic birth, definitely get help. There's such good help out there. There's counselors that work specifically for this issue and they're wonderful and they're here to serve you. And I could have really benefited from that for sure.
Right. So given that experience with Erikel now moving into a second pregnancy, you know, unplanned as well, were you certain right off the bat you would want to go home birth again and see how that went? Or where were you at, you know, in your headspace once you had this new pregnancy to plan for?
You know, despite how Erica's birth went, I never felt like home birth was the wrong choice. And mm-hmm. I never felt like home birth wasn't safe.
Right.
You know, our story was pretty unique and it was our story, but home birth itself, I never saw that as being like a failure or a failing on my part or a failure on the part of my midwives or a model of care. So
I love that.
I really trusted birth. I still trust birth. And even though I had that experience that was so shattering, I still really trusted birth. And, you know, don't think I wasn't absolutely terrified, because I was really, really scared. And I think when I first found out I was pregnant, I cried for just a week straight. And I didn't even know, you know, I didn't know how I was going to emotionally confront birth again. But I knew that my only option was birthing at home. That was my only option. There was no way, if I was going to go to a hospital again, I knew I would be treated as a high-risk patient. I knew that there would be different parameters where they would monitor my labor that I, you know, and we can get into the details of this more for your listeners. It might be interesting, but it does vary state to state. So I knew enough about VBAC that in the state where I live, you are, and I'm using air quotes, you are allowed to try to have a vaginal birth in a hospital with an OB, not with a midwife. And there are all these other regulations, you know, like constant fetal monitoring, not intermittent. And you have to have a staffed OR. You know, there's all these weird stipulations that they will consider your labor a high risk that, for me personally, I feel sets women up for not having a great birth experience. You are, as a woman with a prior C-section, you are not allowed in my state to birth in a birth center. It's against the law. And then as far as birthing at home, I knew that home birth midwives exist in this legal gray zone where it's like, it's not really within the scope of their license to do it, or their insurance doesn't cover it or something. They're not supposed to do it.
Yeah.
And if any Washington midwives are listening, I hope I'm characterizing this correctly. This is kind of what I understood from my midwives. So they're not really supposed to do it, but there are some here that will. And the reason that they do it is because they see it as a human rights issue, that women should have this option.
Yeah.
And also, the literature shows that it's safe. Like, VBAC is safe. It's really safe. And especially now that we're in an era where surgical techniques have improved a lot from previous generations.
Right.
It's really, like, the risk of uterine rupture is incredibly low. It's so low. It's safe to VBAC. So there are midwives that know this, and they really want to support women at home. So they kind of do it under the table. They don't advertise that they do it. And in order to achieve a home birth with a midwife where I live, you kind of just have to get connected with like a super secret society of women who've done it, women who can give you a name. And so that's
like, go outside and like give a signal, like woohoo, and like a midwife comes and greets you or something and like takes you down a back alley. Oh my gosh.
It's like not a bat signal, but like the uterus signal. Maybe, I don't know.
I just want to like acknowledge here, first of all, everything you just said, I want to, when this is aired, I want to listen to it, pause it, rewind, and like listen to it again, because I find it, I'll use the term fascinating, other than a number of other words I could use or might want to, depending on whatever, fascinating the intricacies to which women can or cannot legally birth certain ways in certain states based on prior experience or a prior medical procedure, whatever. Like, I just can't think of any other condition of the physical experience. I also don't want to get like feminist rant on this, but I just can't think of any other scenario in which a man would not be able to do a certain thing medically because of something. It just kind of all blows my mind. And so I'll just say fascinating that you can't do what you want with your uterus. Like, what? I don't know.
Oh, I could get all ranty too, but I'll save that for a different
show. Yeah. And that could be a whole show, right? I mean, the policies and the laws vary so much state to state. I mean, even being some states up until recently, like Alabama, where you couldn't legally home birth, you know, with any attendant care.
Right.
All of that. And then I want to touch on how you said VBAC is safe. And I want to go into that for a second and just, you know, for the average person or the listener who might not know anything about it, you know, I want to play the other side of why, you know, why, Diana, why is it safe? You know, the only thing, me personally, that I ever heard about not doing a vaginal birth or especially a home birth after a cesarean was what you alluded to. Oh, well, my uterus is going to explode. Or like it's going to mm-hmm. rupture, you know, that's the most common right. thing you hear. So can you touch on like for another second, you know, why is it safe?
It's safe because, okay, well, I want to say, I mean, one way that I have to preface my answer is that I'm going into this not knowing why a specific person might've had their primary C-section. So mm-hmm. if there is an underlying issue that's causing your primary C-section, right. like a, you know, crazy anatomical issue mm-hmm. or, you know, wildly uncontrolled preeclampsia or something like that, that's a different thing. But
absolutely. And I did put you on the spot here.
Oh, no. I'm happy to talk about this. This is Great. My favorite thing to talk about, actually. So if we're talking about a normal, healthy woman that had a C-section under the circumstances, much like mine, mm-hmm. much like my circumstances yes. were, which, by the way, is the vast majority of C-sections that are happening in this country are, you know, way overuse of interventions in hospitals sure. that lead to unproductive labor patterns and all of these things. So anyways, if we're talking about that, the main concern that providers have is, and also, you know, mothers, is uterine rupture. That's really the only issue, you know, the concern that because your uterus has been cut, that it's gonna, you know, burst open during labor mm-hmm. and that makes you high risk. Yeah. And the actual statistics on that are so low. It's like, I think around 1%, which puts it at the same level chance as any other true obstetric emergency, such as like placenta previa or, you know, a cord prolapse, right. You know, certainly a true emergency. But it's literally, you can think about it at that same level of, it's that likely to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many of us that birth at home, we know, okay, there is a very, very tiny small chance that we could have a cord prolapse. It's extremely rare, but it happens, and that would be a true emergency, and that would require hospitalization. So uterine rupture now in the year 2017, it's that likely to happen. It just really shouldn't be our main concern.
Right.
And then okay. the other aspect of this is that the risks of having repeat C-sections are so much higher, and the associated complications that can happen are so much more common than a uterine rupture.
Right.
So we're actually putting ourselves at a greater risk to have repeated C-sections than to attempt to have a vaginal birth after C-section. And in fact, ACOG, which in my personal opinion is a total dinosaur of an organization, just recently updated their professional guidelines for obstetricians and gynecologists. And they actually say this. They say that VBAC is appropriate. All women should be given the opportunity to VBAC, you know, assuming that, like I said, there isn't some other strange medical issue going on.
Right.
So, I mean, if they can say that, you know, people in our communities have been, you know, we've known this for a really long time. I think that we can all feel pretty safe. Mm. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. And I love that. And that was helpful for me being someone who I haven't known someone personally to have a VBAC. I, you know, am not in that boat myself. And so just for myself, I feel like it sheds a lot of light, and just to hear an empowered perspective on it is very, let's just say, delicious. It's just, I love that. So yes, I think you did an amazing job. And I want to put it out there, if you're open to this, for any listeners who might have follow-up questions to anything we're talking about regarding your experience, you know, that I could throw them your way, and maybe you could even shed some more light, some things that I'm not thinking about given my context. I might not be asking some of the questions that some listeners are thinking right now.
Oh my gosh, I would love to connect with your listeners.
Cool.
let's definitely share my information at the end of this.
Cool.
And you know, I mentioned to you that I've been interviewed a few times to tell my story. And the greatest gift that has come out of sharing the story is that I've received so many DMs on Instagram, messages on Facebook from women like really all over the world that said, hey, your story made me feel good. And I also have been through birth trauma and thank you for speaking about it. And can you talk to me about this? And I love, love, love connecting with other mothers. It's just been such an absolute gift. So yeah, I'm so open to that.
Amazing. Awesome. I think, you know, we stepped in and out, which is amazing. I love like backstories and like tangent conversations and things. But where we were, I believe at one point was home birth was your only option. And so what then was, I don't know, like what was the plan or, you know, who did you put in place to support you moving into birth number two and all of that?
Yeah. So like I said, I knew that I had to get connected. I had to put out the uterus signal and get connected to the super secret midwife person that I didn't know how to find and I didn't know where to go. And I didn't know where to start. I really had no idea where to start. And so a few weeks into my pregnancy, I was still kind of teary and contemplating, you know, what do I do? What do I do? And I had the sudden memory that I was in a yoga class, prenatal yoga class, when I was pregnant with Erikel. And our prenatal yoga teacher had shared with the class in somehow in a very gracious, not scary, positive way that she had had a C-section with her first baby. And it sounded like I can't remember the details, but it sounded like a true emergency. Mm-hmm. And then a home birth with her second baby. And she shared this story very briefly with all of us in class. And I remember that at the time when I heard her story, I thought, wow, what an incredible woman. What courage that must have taken for her to do that. I mean, that's just amazing. And then I thought, well, of course, it's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to have a C-section. But I remembered her telling this story. And then in the same flash of insights, I remembered that she had given me her email address.
Oh.
Because she shared it with her pregnant mamas and wanted to hear how her births went. She's just a really open, lovely person. And so I dug through my phone and I found her email and I was like, Diana, this is it. This is how you do this. So I emailed her. I said, you know, you probably don't remember who I am, but I was in your class like 3 years ago. And I remember you shared the stories of your birth. And I find myself in a really similar situation as you were. And I don't really know where to go to find a midwife. Can you help me? And she, bless her heart, she emailed me back right away. Mm. She even remembered who I was, which shocked me, but she totally remembered who I was. And she told me, Diana, get in touch with your local ICANN group. Mm. ICANN is the International Cesarean Awareness Network, and they have chapters in every single major city in the U.S. And they are an organization that supports women who have had C-sections. They support women looking to VBAC. They support women who have to have C-sections and want to have a positive experience. Mm-hmm. They share evidence-based information. They're just, I found them to be an incredibly useful, wonderful organization. And so, and I should say an organization that I've been pretty involved in since having my second baby to kind of pay it forward.
That's awesome.
So that's what I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I did. I found my local ICANN group. There's one here in Seattle. And I joined their Facebook group and I introduced myself and I explained my situation that I needed to find a midwife. And that was it. They connected me with the super secret list. And I went down that super secret list and I called every single midwife that was within a reasonable distance to me. And as it turned out, there was only one that was taking on a client for my due date month. And so that was it. I found my midwife.
Wow.
That's how I navigated it and I found it.
Wow. When you hear things like that, I just have so much gratitude for social media and technology the way it has evolved now, because there are just some amazing nuggets and magical things that we can create from it. And then of course there's like the silly stuff that I don't love. But then when you hear that you were able to do that, you were able to get into that space and create what you did as a result of that, I'm just like, thank you everyone who creates those platforms, because if you could get that out of it, awesome. And I'm going to look up ICANN and I'm going to put links to it on our show notes at dihpodcast.com. So I'll put that there so that listeners can check that out.
Great. Excellent. That's great.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, social media. I mean, it changed my life.
Yeah.
It gave me this incredible gift.
Yeah. Wow. So then moving forward into as birth got closer, what sort of things were you doing or thinking or working on to prepare?
Well, I should say that here's where the trauma piece kind of gets connected right. back in, because now that I had my kind of my plan in place, I had a provider who was going to attend me at home. I had to heal. I mean, mm-hmm. this was my calling to heal. I knew that I couldn't come into this birth carrying the trauma of my first birth, because I knew it would affect me. And I had a lot of work to do. I was really scared. I mean, I was not brave. I was very, very scared of having another situation like my first birth. And I felt as if I had another planned home birth that turned into a transfer, that turned into an emergency C-section, I could not come back from that. And this is just me. You know, I know that there are women that have C-sections that feel totally fine about them. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And I don't want to like put my own feelings about it or my own trauma around it onto somebody else. But for me personally, birth is so, I'm going to tear up just saying it. It's so sacred. It's so sacred. And I recognize that this was a moment that like my soul wanted so bad. Mm. I really wanted to birth my baby. I wanted to be fully present for his birth. Mm. I did not want to be anesthetized. I wanted to be in my home with my husband. I didn't want people touching me or hurting me or hurting him. And it just was, this was an opportunity that I knew I had that I could not pass up. I knew I had to try to do this again. I had to try to heal from my first birth. And it just was, this was my sacred moment. Mm. So to answer your question, I just threw everything at the wall.
Yeah.
I went to counseling. I did tons of prayer and meditation. Mm-hmm. I treated my body like an absolute temple. I've never taken as good care of my body as I did during this pregnancy. I spoke to my baby every single day. I also did a lot of checking in with myself and being really, really clear, like, Diana, are you making this decision to birth at home out of fear because you're afraid of a hospital? Or is this really where this baby needs to be born? Like, mm-hmm. I had to get really extremely clear on that and clear away the fear and really listen to my intuition and listen to my baby. And I did that. And the answer that I always got was, this is going to be a different experience. This is a different baby. You and him, you know, have different shared karma together, and it's just going to be a different experience. That's what the answer I kept getting over and over again. So I had to trust it.
Wow.
So I did a lot of really deep work during this time, and I just used every tool, every tool you got, every single tool. Like I said, I went to counseling, I practiced tons of yoga, I prayed, I just did everything I possibly could to heal. And when it got up to my birthing time, I was in a pretty good place. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you that I was totally fearless or that I was 100% confident that I could do this, because I wasn't. I'm still scared.
Right.
But I knew that when I got around to my birthing time, I knew that, okay, I had really done the work. I knew that I had done the work, and that gave me solace, because I thought, if I've really done the work and I have a outcome that isn't ideal, at least I know that I really showed up for this birth in a very deep way. And I can accept, hopefully, that this baby needed to come in a different way than I wanted him to come. Right. So that's where I was at.
So then tell us about birthing time. Yeah, that's all I'll say. I'll shut up.
I'll tell you. So I had this, as you can imagine, during my whole pregnancy, I asked my midwives at every single appointment, you know, when they would palpate my belly and measure my belly, does this baby seem big to you? Does this baby seem big to you? And they knew my history. They knew that I had a 12-pound baby. And every single time, the answer was, he seems very average sized. And I felt that way too. He seemed smaller in my body than my first one. So So I had this moment right at 40 weeks. I had my 40-week appointment right at 40 weeks. And I went into my midwife's office and we had, you know, the standard blood pressure, palpate the belly, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. I had all my home birth supplies. We were all ready to go anytime. And I asked them, you know, just again, one last time, does this baby seem good to you? And she said, no, he seems like a very average sized baby to me from what I can tell. And so I left that appointment and I had this moment, Sarah, I don't even know if I can fully convey it, but I left the office and I stepped onto the sidewalk and I felt this lightning bolt chill go through my whole body. And it was a knowing that felt like it was coming from God herself in my body saying, Diana, this is going to happen and it's going to be good. Ooh. It was like, I knew it. It was a full body chill sensation. I've never before or since had an experience like that, but I knew this was going to be good and it was going to happen. Mm. And I'll never forget that moment. It was amazing. So that very night, right at 40 weeks, I woke up around 2 a.m. in full labor. Oh. And it was like hard contractions coming 2 minutes apart, no breaks. And it was kind of like this labor started in what was the middle of my last labor, if that makes sense. It was like 12 hours in to my last labor was when this labor started. Mm. Like really fast, really furious, really hard. So I got up out of bed. I filled up a bathtub. I wanted to let my husband sleep and my two-year-old to sleep as long as they could. So I stumbled into the bathtub and tried to, you know, use the water to help get me comfortable, because last time being in the water was really the only pain relief that it was really the only thing that worked with for me in terms of coping with the pain. But it was so interesting. This time it was totally different being in a bathtub and being in the water. Just, I felt really ungrounded. I didn't feel like I could get comfortable. I felt like too hot or too cold. And it just was a totally different labor in every way. It was totally different. So I got out of the water and I went downstairs and got on my birth ball and labored there for a little bit. And then right at around 4 a.m., I was like, I can't, I need help. The midwife has got to come now. My doula's got to come. This is happening very fast. I could just tell it was happening fast. So yeah. I woke up my husband. I told him I'm in labor. It's happening really fast. We got to call the midwives right now. And so we called them right at around 4 a.m. And they showed up around 5 a.m. There was two of them that showed up. And my doula came at that time as well. And I eventually removed my two-year-old to a different room in the house, and I went back up into our bedroom and I just labored there. And it was a very, very intense labor, very different from my first. I remember the midwives trying to give me suggestions, like maybe this position or maybe try the birth stool. And it was like nothing they said was relevant. You know what I mean? Like nobody could help me. My doula was like, she was very lovely and really tried to support me in different ways, physically or emotionally, but it was like, I was just in it and it was almost like no one else was in the room. I mean, I was aware of people being there, but nobody could touch my labor land. It was just me and my son. And eventually another weird thing about this labor is that I felt like I never really got on top of the contractions. Like, I'm sure you can relate to this. Like in my first labor, I kind of got into a groove where it was like, okay, I know a contraction's coming. I know this is going to work for me if I make this sound or I'm in this position, and then I can get through it. You know, like you kind of get in, you figure out what your rhythm is. And in this labor, I never got that. Like I couldn't get on top of it. And the other thing that I felt that was interesting to me was just this incredible pressure, like that feeling of my baby moving through my pelvic bones and pushing my bones apart. And man, that is a distinctive feeling. And that's what I never felt. It never even came close to feeling that with my first labor and my first baby. You know, now that I felt that, I know exactly what that descending feeling feels like. I mean, it's unmistakable.
Yeah.
So it was an intense few hours. And I ended up sitting in my bed, kind of propped upright, sitting in my bed with my husband behind me. I was probably sitting like in the exact place where he was conceived, which is kind of beautiful to me.
Oh, I love that.
And he shot out of me. like I totally like experienced that fetal ejection reflex,
right,
where I wasn't
okay.
pushing. I never pushed. It was like my labor process was, I had to get out of my own body's way and let my body do it. And that's exactly what I did. So I was kind of sitting upright. He shot out of me in just one quick contraction, and I pulled him up onto my chest, and it was amazing. It was the most amazing moment of life. He looked right up at me. He didn't cry. He was white, just alert. He pooped all over me, and I've never been happier to be pooped on in my entire life. My husband was there, and he quickly, I'm so grateful that he did this, but he had the foresight to snap a couple of pictures of me right after, I mean, literally right after Rama was born. I'm holding him in my arms and looking at him. And Sarah, you would have thought that I had just taken like a boatload of ecstasy and danced all night, or had like 15 orgasms in a row. I mean, I'm glowing. I've never seen me glow like that. Those afterbirth hormones are so legit. It was amazing. And it's exactly what I wanted. I just wanted to feel that moment so badly. And it was incredible. His placenta came right out. I got to see it. I kept it this time. That was another really bummer thing about my first birth, is that I didn't get to keep my placenta or even see it. But this time I did. And everything was perfect, honestly. I had no postpartum issues. And I should say, the moment that he was born was right around 8 a.m. And that means that I had a 6-hour labor.
Wow.
So I started labor right at 2 a.m. and he was born at 8 a.m. So very fast. Totally different experience. Like, everything about the experience was completely different. I really think it's because he's just a completely different child. And I think that our babies really do, you know, they come in with their own people right from day one. It was incredible. Breastfeeding was so easy. This time around I had no problems. It was just easy as cake. And he's two now, and we're still breastfeeding, and
wow,
that's been kind of a sweet gift to give him too.
That's amazing. We'll have to talk more about that too, because I'm at 14 months still nursing, and there's, you know, a lot of conversation around that on many different sides and angles, and people who have experience with that or don't, and think that there's only, you know, one way to do it. Or I think there's a very interesting perspective on it from a Western culture compared to like the rest of the world and how they do breastfeeding. I'm in a stage right now of like evaluating for myself what we're going to be doing next or in the next couple of months and what it's going to look like. So it's an amazing gift. I like how you said that we've been able to experience it thus far. And I've kind of now reached a point of like, I don't know now what is next. You know, it was very clear in the first year what was happening with it. And now I'm like, I don't know. I'm feeling a little lost in the sea of breastfeeding.
I totally feel you. I'm right there with you. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just don't know what to do with you, Diana. I think this is just all so awesome. I can pretty much guarantee follow-up conversations on this episode and questions on it and whatever, just because it's so rich with stuff and all different. I was even reflecting, you know, just a few moments ago as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, healing from your first birth and all of that, not even comparing it to a cesarean or a traumatic cesarean, but I had hernia surgery a couple years ago, right inguinal, you know, hernia, so very low, right down in there. Mm-hmm. And I had to have two surgeries for it actually in a week's time. And it was it was a very big ordeal. Like, you know, I had a wound vac and they let it heal from the bottom up. So I had a basically an open wound I was walking around with for a month. And then after that, you know, doctors were telling me because of its placement and whatever, you know, you might not be able to have a vaginal birth. You might not even be able to carry to term because as your uterus expands and whatever, like just telling me these things. And then as I moved, you know, into actually preparing for pregnancy and getting pregnant and having conversations with my midwife, it's like all of that was cover their butt conversations. Like,
totally
does not hold any water. And I mean, clearly I birthed an 8-pound baby. So it's like, but it's just, I even got to like redo some of that in my head and heal it in a new different way, just hearing your conversation. So even not, you know, a cesarean, you know, experience, but just having any sort of surgery down there that could potentially complicate that experience and that process. I'm grateful for that, just to be able to look back at that and be like, huh, that was interesting.
Wow. That sounds like a pretty dramatic surgery too. Wow.
But it just shows you like what you can, it shows you a lot of things. I think it shows the incredible strength of your inner spirit and intuition and that, you know, divinity within you, and then the trust you have with yourself. I mean, I just love, there's so many quotables from you. I mean, you saying I trust birth. I mean, that's amazing. I want to put that on a shirt.
I think it is on a shirt somewhere. I think Indie Birth put it on a shirt somewhere. Or something.
Oh, love Indie Birth. I just did I was just on her show.
I know, Sarah. I listened to it. You were amazing.
Thank you.
I love Indie Birth.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So great. I guess as we're wrapping up here, because I don't really want to, I want this conversation to just keep going forever. Just any sort of anything that you want to leave listeners or mothers with as it relates to VBAC or home birth after cesarean, just anything you kind of want to leave them with, either based on your experience or anything for them going forward. You know, I'll let you have the floor.
Okay. Wow. I want to say the first thing that comes to my mind that I want to say is that birth trauma is a thing. And if you feel traumatized by your birth, even if you didn't have a C-section, that is legitimate and you really can honor that. And many, many, many of us understand you and will hear you and honor your story. So that's really the first thing that I want to say. I also want to say that birth is safe. Our bodies were meant to birth, and none of us are broken. I mean, you got sort of that message from doctors that like, well, because you had the surgery, you're kind of broken and your body won't work in the way that it is. But like, your body isn't broken. You know, we're so indoctrinated into not trusting our bodies, especially as women. We're not taught anything about birth.
Yeah.
We live in a culture of fear. We've let male persons take over the birth process for us, which I think is, you know, I love men, but I do think that there's a problem with that.
So
it's going to take some work for us all collectively as women to undo some of that conditioning. You know, we are meant to birth. We're not broken. That's kind of a radical thing to say, but I think it's really important to consider that.
And I
really wish for every woman to have a powerful birthing experience, whatever that looks like. I mean, this is a podcast about home birth. So obviously we're talking about home birth and I'm passionate about home birth, but you know, I think at the end of the day, what we're all interested in is women, mothers having powerful births, because you know, it takes so much strength to be a mother. There's so many ways that it takes strength to be a mother. And when you're left kind of broken and hurt and traumatized and unsure of yourself after birth, it affects mothering. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, if you're left feeling, you know, high on those hormones and powerful, because you are powerful, that really affects your mothering. And you know what? We need a generation of kids that have mothers that feel that they're powerful. We really do. It's what the world needs right now.
100% agree. That resonates on every level. I feel that like on a cellular level, and yes to all of that.
Yes.
Diana, you're amazing. Thank you so, so much. I will. Do you want to go ahead and put out Instagram or any way that people could connect with you if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. My Instagram handle is an instrument of thy peace, like the St. Francis prayer, an instrument of thy peace. Or you can just type in my name, Diana Forsell, and it's actually Diana Forsell Tain, but you'll find me that way too. And I keep my Instagram open, so please reach out to me if you want to connect with me. I love, love, love connecting with other mothers. That's probably awesome. The best way to reach me.
Great. Okay, cool. And I'll include a link to that on the show notes as well. So if you're driving or something like that, or you missed that, go to diahpodcast.com and you can link to that. Again, thank you. I don't know how many times I've said thank you. You're amazing. And
thank you.
Just keep being you.
Oh, thank you. You too. You're an inspiration to me as well.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved. Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.